Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Margaret Kim is out to shape TV's future in two ways, kicking off iStand Television, a new programming venture, and generating innovators through the Future Now Media Foundation. And what's more, Kim is going classroom as an adjunct professor at Pace University here in NYC. There's plenty on Kim's plate, and she joins me next. Later this hour, going to the world of Avenue 5, HBO's new space cruising comedy, with director of photography, Evan Bolter. He'll join us live from New Orleans. Also ahead, Viacom CBS's next smart TV move, our classic trivia question, and here's what connects Gene Reynolds, Lucy Jarvis, and Kirk Douglas. They all made TV better for us all, and we'll celebrate. Hello, everyone. I'm Todd Applebaum. I'm simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio Speaker and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow we televise. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get free ebooks and a President's Day special offer when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. Happy to have you with us on this Friday afternoon for the program All About Television. 48 degrees at the top of the hour. Once again, welcome those of you joining us for the very first time this week through TuneIn Radio and TuneIn.com. We have a wonderful hour plus for you, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, a phone call from you. So pick up the phone, raise your voice, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio Speaker and TuneIn Radio. And we have a chat room in business for you. So if you're shy about using the phone, no problem. Just go ahead and use the room. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And, of course, while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio Speaker or TuneIn Radio screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Margaret Kim is live with us here in the Big Apple after these news notes. Viacom CBS appears ready to either expand CBS All Access or create a new ad-supported programming venture on smart TV sets and devices, incorporating All Access with other Viacom CBS units. Those units include BET, Comedy Central, MTV, and Paramount. It's not clear if original content will be made and played on this new venture. Reports from CNBC and elsewhere suggest an announcement will happen February 20th when Viacom CBS presents its first quarterly results as a combined organization. Besides CBS All Access, the company has a number of smart TV set and device circulating services, including BET Plus, which launched last fall, CBS Sports HQ, and Noggin, plus multi-channel bundle Pluto TV. Now, a couple quickies before we get to our first guest. ABC will have the Conners cast do a live promotional spot of the series during the Academy Awards Sunday night. They will talk about who won and who lost those statuettes up to that point. And Vice TV, formerly Viceland's version of former HBO program Vice News Tonight, debuts March 4th. It will run an hour Mondays and Thursday nights and run live at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And that is news notes for today. And now joining me live here in New York, former A&E Promoting Executive and now overseer of both iStand TV and the Future Now Media Foundation, and as of last week, the new adjunct professor at Pace University here in the Big Apple, Margaret Kim. Hello, Margaret.
Hey, Simon. How are you?
Fine, thank you. You are managing a lot of projects in a lot of time.
Yes. Thanks so much for making time and giving me the opportunity to be on your show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. Before we get to where you're at with iStand and with Future Now, what do you think about where we're at with television these days?
Where are we? What are you talking about, regular television or just content in general, including everything?
Everything. You know, with broadcast, cable, mega programming services, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, smart TV sets, smart devices, what they can do, the whole gamut.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting to see all of this kind of energy that's in the industry right now. I do think it's kind of a mad scramble, and everybody's trying to get into the OTT space right now after Netflix. You know, I really attribute Netflix as being the major disruptor of the traditional broadcast and cable industry. They really started the wave, and what is it? They spent $15 billion on programming last year, which is crazy. But you know, they are really moving fast and furious, and so it's going to be interesting to see Disney coming in, you know, with their, they just announced some major subscribers. 26 million, was it, Simon, yesterday?
Actually, more than that, 28.6. It was 26 million after the end of last year, but in the last 2 months, they had another, last month and change, they've had another million,
right.
2 million plus. Now almost 29 million.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so it's really interesting, and to see where everything is going to be, I guess, in the next year, and see who's out front.
Does it stagger you? You know, does it stagger you, Margaret, that you know you have Apple TV that thought, oh, they're spending $1 billion on our programming service, and actually spending more than like $7-8 billion on what they've got so far, what they've got coming up, or you have Peacock and HBO Max, and now maybe Viacom, CBS doing something. That we're going to see like incredible amounts to the billions being spent on a wider variety of new programming.
Right. And who knows how it'll shake out, especially with this younger Gen Z set. So it's been interesting because I've kind of gotten a front row seat on how the Gen Z is consuming content with through my class at Pace that you mentioned, and also through the Future Now Media and Entertainment Conference and the work that we're doing there and connecting future leaders coming into the business. And I think, you know, a lot of them are, I think they're still thinking like consumers and not as future business people of solving some of the challenges that the business faces now because of this disruption and because of the plethora of OTT services and content. So we'll see. It's a very interesting time.
One of the things that's most interesting, Margaret, is smart TV sets and smart TV devices, where we now know that the majority of people in this country have them. They are watching billions of hours of content apps on them. And yet there still is this sort of stereotype out there that, oh, the millennials, the Gen X, the Gen Y, the Gen Zs are not watching television. They're watching smartphones and so forth. But when I've gone to New York University in the last year or two, or at the Paley Center for Media, where I had a group of college students, it seems that the majority of them are watching television. They have these devices, and they are watching television, and it sometimes makes you wonder, why isn't the press getting this? Why isn't that impression happening? Where, yes, television is still a medium of choice for the Gen Z, the Gen X, you know, and so forth crowd.
I'm sorry, what's the question? Sorry?
Does it surprise you that people still have this notion of, oh, Gen Zers only watch TV on smartphones, they don't watch TV on TV, and yet when you talk to them, they say, yeah, I've got an Apple TV, I've got an Apple TV device, or I've got a Samsung TV set, and that's why I watch television. And in fact, I'm watching more TV on my TV than I am someplace else.
Right. I don't think anyone's abandoning television per se, but I think they certainly are shifting more to mobile. And to me, I think the future is mobile. I think that's where if you're innovating, you've got to be innovating on mobile. Because yes, they're still watching TV on a TV set in a living room or you know in their apartments, but much more so on their phones, much more on the go.
Given that thought, what do you think about QB, which is about 2 months away from launching, what Jeffrey Katzenberg and Maine Vintner are doing with this idea of short-form programming bursts?
Yeah, you know, I am not sure. I mean, it's funny because initially iStan TV and how I had envisioned iStan TV, I was kind of on the first wave of thinking like, you know what, everything is going to be an internet connection. And so that's why I the vision for Quibi is pretty similar to what I was envisioning for iStan, except Quibi got the millions and billions of dollars behind it. You know, coming out now out of the gate, it'll be interesting to see how that works. I mean, I think it helps that it's an ad-supported network as opposed to a subscription model. It's going to be about how to get the word out to consumers that Quibi exists. Because right now you're in the marketplace of a lot of noise around Disney Plus and all of those services. So to add another app, another thing to watch, I think the challenge is not just getting the content out there, but getting the word out that Quibi actually exists. So I think that's really a discoverability issue. I think it's a discoverability issue.
Say the last part again.
I think it's a discoverability issue. You know, so it's the marketing, as much as content is king, it's about the marketing, because it's not enough just to build it. You have to get the word out that it exists. And so, you know, the challenge for any of the OTT networks and any of the content that are on these OTT networks, it's about discoverability. So even with Netflix having spent $15 billion on content just last year, you know, how do you discover all of that content? It's extremely difficult for Netflix to even, because you can't market everything, right? So how do you not just create the content, but how do you get the awareness of that content's existence and get people to watch it? That's where the challenge is, because I think the marketing needs to also catch up with the programming dollars at this point.
You are hearing Margaret Kim. She's the new adjunct professor at Pace University, former A&E program executive, and now she's got two ventures she's working on full-time, and that is iStan TV. It's a new program venture. We're going to talk about that shortly. And the Future Media Now Foundation, that is out to cause the next generation of TV and media leaders. Margaret joins me live here in New York this half hour. On tomorrow, we'll be televised. Found out when we'll be live from New York. Delighted to have you with us on Blog Talk Radio Speaker, and in our first week on TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. If you have a question or comment for Margaret, ring the call in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple048. We have a phone in the room right now, so use the phone in the room. Either way, we will get to you. Three episodes coming your way next week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at this very hour. And coming up on Wednesday, we'll focus on the new Facebook Watch, well, not new Facebook Watch series, but a series on Facebook Watch going into its third new season later this coming week. It's called The Real Brothers of Simi Valley. We'll have the co-creators of the show, one of whom, Jimmy Cottrell, is the star. And we'll also have the other co-creator, Christian Pierce. Both coming your way Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And coming up 1 week from today on the program, we'll focus on the new Hulu series, Utopia Fall. It may be one of the sleeper shows early on in 2020. We'll tell you more about who will be on from that series coming up in a little bit. Margaret, where are things at with iStan TV? I know it's on our website right now. What is the service all about? When will it be on TV?
Well, iStan TV, we're going through a bit of a next stage pivot, and so we're looking to turn iStan TV into an online film festival of sorts, where we will be taking in content and providing feedback on content that would be coming in from and submitted by the 18 to 24 demographic. This has become one of my favorite age group, is that 18 to 24, and really serving that 18 to 24. So so with Future Now and iStan TV, I look at them as two sides of the same coin. Future Now is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we are building future leaders coming into the business. And so through our conference, which is happening in May, the Future Now Media and Entertainment Conference, we are providing connection points and opportunities for students to connect with our industry's top leaders, executives, professionals, to be mentored by them, to learn from them, to understand the media ecosystem and the plethora of opportunities that are in the industry that they might not otherwise know just being in college and studying about it. And so that's really providing opportunity and building a talent pipeline into the industry and giving people access that they wouldn't otherwise have. And then we've got iStan TV on the other side, which is really focused on content creation and being a platform for content creators and helping them be better storytellers. And again, through that platform, which we are in the midst of building right now, and we will be launching a new incarnation of that in the coming months, of being a platform where young creators can submit their content and get professional feedback on their content, and then have the opportunity for that content to be seen on iStan TV. And so we really want to help build future storytellers, as well as future business leaders and future technologists in the industry. And really the heart and the mission behind both of these initiatives is to really, you know, we want to see more diverse storytelling. We want to see more, and for that to happen on the front end, we need more diversity on the back end, you know, future business leaders that are coming from different perspectives. And so even with how we recruit for Future Now and that Media and Entertainment Conference, students have to apply to attend that conference, and we cast a very wide net. So we have a network of over 650 colleges and universities across the country that we reach out to about this conference. They then get the word out to their student body. And so we have students who are coming from all over the country, and they're coming from every racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic background. They're coming from community colleges to Ivy League schools and everything in between. And they apply to attend this conference. And so, you know, we get a very richly diverse cohort of students coming to this conference every year. And then they are the talent, the future talent, the future leaders that are coming into this industry. And so, you know, it's really exciting what we're seeing happening. And we're in our fourth year of this conference. This year, coming up in May, it'll be May 27th to the 29th. And over those 3 days, we have a welcome and networking reception on day one. We have the full conference day on day two, and then we have media tours on day three. And those media tours are different companies open up their doors to take groups of students and show them around. Introduce them to other people, other employees and leaders in the company, and share about what the company and what the brand does. And so it's a tremendous opportunity for students. And it's on the flip side, it's a great opportunity for the companies to really get their brands in front of these young people. So that's what's happening, and that's what's you know, getting me excited about the industry, is about building these future leaders.
Yeah. For iStan TV, what kind of content are people producing? Are these students producing?
So the new incarnation we are in the midst of building right now. But what I would say is that we are looking for content that is, you know, powerful, edifying storytelling. So it could come in any format. It could be documentary, it could be feature, it could be animation, it could be talk, it could be any format. But the goal is, the filters for us would be, is it a good story? Is it done in a way, is it told in a way that is edifying? We're not looking for kind of stupid content, just good, stupid fun. We're really looking for content that actually has some meat behind it and something to say. So I would describe it that way: smart, edifying entertainment and informational content.
When it comes to the Future Now Media Foundation, how much emphasis is going to be made on some of the newer frontiers of television, like interactive TV, 5G now becoming a television thing as much as a smartphone thing, and what it could provide in terms of different kinds of services, the rollout of ATSC 3.0, what they call next gen television on broadcast stations this year, at least in the major cities, and also new possibilities such as the ability to connect what you do in your television set and use it to control other things in your home or apartment. such as your lights or your front door or video chat or other such things?
Yeah, so, you know, our speakers, we have keynotes and panels and mentoring sessions at our conference. And part of the conference, most of the morning sessions are really around the education of our industry. And so, or about our industry. And so, you know, we do a tech panel. And so on that tech panel, we would have speakers speaking to what you mentioned. So about, you know, the cutting edge, what's happening right now, where are the opportunities, where's the innovation happening, where can we see things going? Those will all be part of that tech panel. And hey, maybe you have some recommendations of people to talk to.
I got one off the bat that we're going to hopefully try to get, and that is Jesse Rednitz, who is the person behind WarnerMedia's new Innovation Lab that will be opening in New York in the next few months in the Chelsea area. We did a Media Goes story on him and about this lab. I think this is a very, very big deal for WarnerMedia and for TV overall. And I would love to see he was at the NFC's conference last November. We're going to try to see him, get him on the program. I think he'd be a fantastic guest for your conference.
Hey, I appreciate the recommendation. That'd be awesome.
You're very, very welcome. Joining us right now this half hour to Why We Tell Lies, Margaret Kim, former program executive at A&E, folks behind A&E, History Channel, Vice TV, and formerly Vice and so forth. And now she has two projects she's big on, and she is overseeing iStan TV and the Future Now Media Foundation. She joins me live here in New York, by the way. She's also a new adjunct professor at Pace University, not far from the Brooklyn Bridge, by the way, linking Brooklyn and Manhattan. And she joins us here this half hour on Swabi Televised. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. Thank you again for joining us this Friday afternoon on Blog Talk Radio Speaker. And as of this week, tune in radio at TuneIn.com Live. If a question or comment or meeting minutes with Margaret, make the call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Next Friday, Hulu premieres two new series. One, based on the cult film classic High Fidelity. That's the film with John Cusack that had a lot of critical acclaim way back when. But the other another series that's premiering that you're not hearing a lot about called Utopia Falls. It's a show that combines science fiction, the environment, a group of very interesting young people, music, and dance. We'll find out how the formula all works with the two people making the show possible, creator executive producer R.T. Thorne, who also has a fine show called Find Me in Paris, by the way, that's running somewhere on one of the smart TV programming services, and Andrea Bellafola, executive producer with Sonar Entertainment, the production company behind the program. Utopia Falls will spotlight it Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise, 1 week from today. And Margaret, something else you're doing is a podcast. How is that going so far?
Yeah, it's going great. You know, we're turning our conference sessions into those podcasts, and we're doing original content also for those podcasts. But we just launched that in the fall, and I have to say, it is being produced by two of our Future Now alums, Sean McDuffie and Jason Rugg, and it's one of those amazing, you know, experiences for me personally, having, you know, doing what I'm doing with Future Now, because these two guys came to the conference in 2018, and that was our second conference, and they had driven together from Chicago to New York to attend this conference. We met in the morning as they were waiting outside online to come into the building, and then so I got to chat with them and say hello and meet them in the morning, and then I saw them again at the end of the conference, at the end of the day, and I was just so impressed with them, and I was like, so what did you guys think of the conference? And they were like, you know, we drove from Chicago, we didn't know what to expect, but it had far exceeded their expectations, and they followed up with me. You know, I got a lot of thank you notes from the students that attended the conference, which is so, you know, just very heartwarming. But even in their follow-up note, it was something very, very different, because what they said in their email, in their thank you email, was like, hey, you know, we would love to, you know, help grow Future Now. And one of the things that, you know, we do X, Y, and Z, we edit, we produce, you know, we do animation, graphics, et cetera. And, you know, like, we think you should do a Future Now Media podcast. And so we got on a phone call. They pitched doing the Future Now Media podcast, and they were like, we want to do this for you. And I was like, well, I can't pay you guys. we're just a you know, startup nonprofit organization right now. And it was so amazing because they, you know, they just, we're like, we just want to do this because of everything that Future Now has already given to us. We want to help grow it. And so they've been producing the Future Now Media podcast. I mean, they have taken all the material. They're writing, Sean's writing the intros and outros. And, you know, I'm working with them to, edit that copy. And then Jason's been editing the pieces together and then posting them. And now we're on, I think, 8 different platforms. We just got on Apple last week. So it's growing and it's exciting. And again, a lot of this is just happening organically. I mean, I put it in a business plan, but, you know, it's happening organically because the students are seeing the value of what we are offering through Future Now. And so, you know, the most rewarding part of all of this has been seeing the value that we are putting forth as an organization to these students, and they're feeling the love, and then they're pouring back into it. And so, you know, Future Now Media podcast, look out for it. It's on Apple, it's on Stitcher, and Google, Anchor FM, and et cetera. So yeah, you can see the whole lineup on FutureNowConference.com.
And incidentally, personal disclosure, we're going to try to see if we can come on your podcast before the month is out. And before we go,
yes,
Margaret, one last question. We know where we are with television at the start of this new decade. Where do you think we're going to be at the end of this new decade?
You know, that is the trillion-dollar question, right? I think we're going to – I think technology is going to advance, and it's going to be mobile, but I think we might end up with a whole new platform, and I'm not sure what that platform is. And it's interesting because I was talking – we did a Future Now Leadership Talk event on Wednesday – this past Wednesday, actually. And my guest was Gabriella Mirabelli, who's the executive vice president at Valence Media, which is the holding company for Hollywood Reporter, Billboard, Declet Productions, et cetera. And I'm going to steal this from her, quote her, because I agree with her. And she was saying, I think it's – because I asked her the same question you're asking me, and – she said, I think we're going to end up with a whole new platform that has yet to be launched. But I do think that is going to happen. And it's I'm going to add in, I think AI is going to be a huge, huge part of that. So we'll see. I think ultimately content will always be king, but the platform, that is an every quickly evolving evolving thing. And so I think we're, as we saw the move from TV to cable to satellite to OTT to mobile, you know, I think where we're going to see the innovation is through is the technology, is the platform.
And just to remind you, a lot of smart TV sets and a lot of smart devices now have AI incorporated, so you can control the set with your voice, whether it's through Google Assistant, Alexa, or Siri, or something else. And that person is pretty much on the target in terms of where AI is going to go. And by the way, there's possibly a video AI also, not just audio AI. Jesse Rednitz, by the way, mentioned that last year at the NF Themes Conference, that keep your eye on video AI. It could very well be a big factor.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of scary too. I mean, if I don't know if you've done much on the deep fakes and what they're able to do to manipulate video images, but that's also a huge concern right now, you know, because it's, you know, tools and technology are here as and you can use it for good or you can use it for evil. And so, you know, it's ultimately, you know, not letting the technology control us, but us controlling the technology. And so what are we going to do with that power? What are we going to do with that tool? And I think that's the thing that we need to be much more conscious of as we continue to advance in our technology and innovation.
If you want to know more about Margaret's Ventures, here's where you go online, istand.tv, for iStandTV, that's istand.tv. And for more about the Future Now Media Foundation and the conference that will be coming up later this year, here's where you go, www.futurenowconference.com. That's www.futurenowconference.com. Check out the podcast. It's available on Apple TV, other websites, and other web destinations as well. And as I said, we're going to try to see if we can get on the podcast as a guest later this month. And Margaret, I'd like to offer an invitation. We would love to originate the show, our show, from your conference. And maybe we can do an interview with somebody like a Jesse Rednitz of the Innovation Lab of Warner Media or something like that. But what do you know, one extended invitation to make it happen.
Yes, sounds good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're very welcome, Margaret. Take care. All the great. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Margaret Kim from iStand TV and the Future Now Media Foundation joining me here in New York. When we come back, we're going to go a little spacey with the director of photography at HBO's popular new hit on Sunday night, Avenue 5, Evan Bolton. He'll join us live from New Orleans. We'll find out why he's in New Orleans during the next half hour, plus our classic trivia question of the week. That's all coming up after we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio, Spreaker, and TuneIn.com. You're home for the best in internet radio all over the world, with over 30 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, Blog Talk Radio is your host for The Francesca Durham Show. Check it out tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, The Francesca Durham Show, right here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And the best of each other, Spreaker, always coming your way 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of Tomorrow Televised on this Friday afternoon, the 7th of February 2020. Signing out, I'm with you live from New York. Very windy outside in the Big Apple, 48 degrees at the top of the hour. Another great guest coming your way over the next half hour. And we invite you, as always, to be part of the program. All it takes, your interaction at 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple041. Coming up later this half hour, our classic trivia question of the week. If you're first with the correct answer, you can win the 5-second rule, the new bestseller by Mel Robbins, the syndicated talk show host. Before we get to our guest, let's get some words in from our wonderful sponsor at Audible.com. The summer of 69 was a big turn of a decade, and if you want to revisit it in a very unique way, how about this wonderful audiobook from Audible.com? It's called Summer of 69 by Ellen Hildebrand. It's a fascinating book, and you can check it out audio style at Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the home for the best in spoken audio, digital entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 180,000 titles to choose from, and you listen on any device, whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn Radio. Remember, just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get 3 free audiobooks, 2 from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. That's everything from original productions, best of Broadway, off-Broadway regional theater, one-man shows, and a one-month trial of the service. And by the way, you get great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And here it is. If you decide to make your trial run a 4-month subscription by President's Day, you can get it at a reduced price, $7.95 a month. That's when you become a subscriber to Audible.com. 4-month subscription for $7.95 a month. That's Audible's special President's Day offer, and it's available now. So get that free trial run going right now at audibletrial.com/televised. Discover for yourself how Audible.com will transform the way you hear the world. A few weeks ago, HBO premiered a new series from the creator of Beast, the Emmy and Peabody Award-winning comedy starring Julia Dreyfus, Armando Iannucci. It's called Avenue 5, and unlike Beast, which takes place in the White House, this takes place in very, very deep space, and it stars the brilliant actor Hugh Laurie as the captain of a space cruise ship, which had all sorts of problems and all sorts of people aboard. Our next guest is somebody very intimately involved in making that series. He is the director of photography, and he joins us live from New Orleans. A pleasure to welcome this program, Evan Bolter. Hello, Evan.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. How did you get involved with Avenue 5?
How did I get involved with Avenue 5? Yeah, what was I doing? I was doing a sci-fi, another TV series, science fiction, called The Feed, which is on Amazon Prime at the moment. I was filming that up in Manchester, England, and my agent mentioned that there was another sci-fi series that was interested in me, but it was directed by Armando Iannucci. So I, massive fan of Armando Iannucci, everything he's done, I think he's a genius, but he does obviously work in comedy, and as a cinematographer, that to be honest, wasn't really, you know, something I was interested in at all, really, from sort of a visual side of things. But I read the script, and it was incredibly funny, loads of really big ideas, and I was just sort of fascinated by how he was going to try and pull off, you know, the Iannucci shtick, for want of a better word, in space. So I traveled down. To Warner Studios, where they were building the sets. They were still about 9 months out from production at that point, but they'd already started building these colossal sets, and I had this really, really big, really long sort of three-hour interview where I met Armando, all the producers, the production designer, Simon Bowles, and started to see the designs and just how incredibly ambitious this was. And the really sort of, well, interesting thing to me is Armando, he basically wanted his cake and to eat it too. He wanted to be able to shoot 3 to 4 cameras cross-shooting to really give the actors as much freedom as possible, to allow them to improvise, try different lines, react naturally, all of those things that he's done so well with Veep and The Thick of It. But he also wanted it to look, serious. He wanted it to feel like a sort of cinematic space film. So the challenge he put to me was, how can I give him cinematic visuals, but also give him the flexibility of being able to shoot in the way that he likes to shoot? So that just really, I mean, from my side, I just kind of took a look at myself and my career and the way I light and the way I've worked in the past. And really, it was a question to myself of whether I was capable of doing that. And if I attempted to do that, what it would look like. So I just sort of thought, you know, with HBO, with Armando being a genius, with all of this opportunity for big sets, what would my version of a multi-camera comedy look like, and how could I maybe bring something new to that genre? So I decided to take it on.
Did you, when taking it on, sort of say, I want to frame the photography like this particular type of science fiction space movie or this particular type of space series? Let's say a classic like Forbidden Planet compared to the recent Star Trek movies or Star Wars movies?
Yeah, so we talked a lot about references. Armando mentioned the Battlestar Galactica remake, the most recent one, but he was also mentioning, you know, much more serious sci-fi. We looked at Tarkovsky's Solaris, which seems ridiculous, but it's true. And we looked at Interstellar, the Christopher Nolan film. And we were sort of just looking at various references and talking about what elements from each we could take to kind of create something new. So we were very aware of other references, but we were always trying to look for something that made it unique to us. So I think there's a kind of warm filmic texture that is a little bit Christopher Nolan. But at the same time, we wanted to be a lot more sort of bold and colorful. So we were always looking for flashes of color and opportunities to have a really rich, full, colorful palette. So yeah, the references were discussed, but we really were always looking for something to make it our own as well.
We have a person that just joined our chat room. Thanks for coming aboard. You have a question or a comment for Evan, make the call, 646-652-296, or put your thoughts in the room, and as soon as you do, sooner we'll get to them. How does doing this program compare to the sci-fi series you did for Amazon Prime Video?
Yeah, I mean, very, very different. So that was a drama. That was very serious. It was pretty much a single camera. So, you know, we could rehearse a scene with the actors. I could talk through the shots with the director, and we could shoot those shots one at a time, very composed, exact marks on the floor. I could move lights exactly where I want them. We could really go into the detail of visual storytelling on a sort of, you know, micro level, really, really detailed. With Avenue 5, we had to be a lot looser. We had to, okay, this is the scene, there's 5 characters in it. We would always rehearse, to be honest, but it was a loose rehearsal. It was actors trying things. Maybe I'm here, maybe I'm there, maybe I do this, or maybe I do that. And then it became a case of how do we best capture that performance with as many cameras as possible. So we'd usually sort of start with a wide shot and then build around that wide shot two, three, maybe four other cameras that could punch in on close-ups of actors. So we'd end up with this kind of master take that was a wide shot, but also three or four other performance shots. So you see what I'm saying? It was much more free-flowing, much less exact on Avenue 5. As to on the feed, we would have a sort of definitive shot list, and it would be very, very precise. But yeah, I think, you know, there's advantages to both. I think there is a real, you get these sort of beautiful accidents in shooting in the kind of verite style on Avenue 5, where, you know, an actor does something unexpected and the camera operator reacts to it, and you kind of catch a perfect moment that it would be very hard to orchestrate. So, yeah, it's sort of a bit more terrifying. You've got to have a lot more sort of, I don't know, faith in fate when you shoot it this way. But, yeah, it was quite thrilling. It was almost like watching live theatre at times and just trying to pick up those performances as best possible.
Avenue 5 is the hit new series on HBO. It's on Sunday night at 10 o'clock Eastern Pacific Time. We've got the rest of the talk with Evan Bolter with us. He joins us live from New Orleans. We'll find out why he is there. He's working on a project for Netflix, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in this half hour. And that's who he joins us from New Orleans. Evan Bolter live with us on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Adler with you live from Nueva York. Good to have you with us. 40 degrees at the top of the hour. You have a question or a comment for Evan? Well, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Friday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, good of our three episodes we're doing next week, we'll focus on another science fiction series that is premiering on Hulu. It's called Utopia Falls. Not only is science fiction, there's music, there's dance, a very interesting group of young people in the lead, and a whole lot more. And we'll find out how it all came together with the creator and executive producer, R.T. Thorne, of Find Me in Paris fame, and Andrew Garfield from Sonar Entertainment, the production company making it happen. Again, Utopia Falls premieres along with High Fidelity next Friday on Hulu on smart TV sets and smart devices. That's coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Talk about what it's like to work with an actor like Hugh Laurie, who it seems that every time he's on the screen, he's like a chameleon. You know, from Stuart Little to his Emmy Award-winning performance in House to other shows he's done, other movies he's done, he always seems to have a very different kind of character about him.
Yeah, he's incredible. I can't say enough good things about Hugh. He's first of all, he's an incredible human being, very, very nice man, very generous, very engaged with the crew. He talks to people. He's incredible. But the real joy on Avenue 5 was a very kind of meta performance because, well, it's only spoiling the first episode. So he's essentially playing a role on board the ship. He's been sort of cast as the captain of the ship. He's this American hero captain figure. But the truth of his character is that he's a British actor who's been hired to play that role. So the real, you know, it's sort of metaphorical for his career in a lot of ways. And watching him go between American and English on camera, there's obviously so much comedy in that. And it was a real joy to work with. Yeah, I mean, I just was so privileged to be able to see his performances and all the improvisation. And that we shot so much material. I mean, Armando likes to shoot sort of twice what he needs. So for our 30-minute episodes, we have 50 to 60 page scripts. We end up with 50 to 60 minutes of material per episode. So, yeah, I think the episodes are good and very funny, but there's so much stuff that I got to see that won't be released. I mean, hopefully they do some special features and some outtakes, but he was brilliant.
How do you work as a cameraman or director of photography, work in a situation where there is a lot of improvisation in the script because it's comedy? And it's not just coming from Hugh's character, but also from the rest of the supporting cast, because there's a very ensemble feel, like there was with Veep, where you had the top player in terms of Julia Dreyfus, but you also had everyone else around her that was equally terrific and could equally react in different ways to scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the challenge. And it became, so I didn't operate the camera on this because we had three to four cameras at all times. I had a team of operators and focus pullers and everything else. And I would have a monitor split into four with all four images, and I'd have an open headset. So in a way, it was kind of like live television at times because I'd have to direct the cameras mid-take. So if Josh was doing something really funny and one of the cameras was on Hugh, I'd ask them to pan across and to find it. And, you know, as you go, everybody kind of gains confidence. Everyone tunes into performances, tunes into what's working. And it becomes almost like an orchestra. Everyone really just gets into the zone of performance. And you get these beautiful moments where operators are panning between, we were calling them swinging singles. So we would swing between two performances, almost like a tennis match at times, following the ball. And that just gives you this a sort of energy that's very different to just cutting between two close-ups. So, yeah, it was a sort of thrilling, difficult experience. And at times we nailed it, and at other times, you know, we didn't. And, yeah, that was the sort of joy and the terror of it.
In your role, Evan, what do you like better, working with someone like Armando, who is sort of super hands-on in various roles with a production of his creation? Mm-hmm. Or do you like working with somebody who, a situation where there's one person who's the writer, one person's the director, one person's the producer, several executive producers, and the there's more of an ensemble feel to putting the program together?
Yeah, it's but I mean, it's hard to say. It does depend on the person, to be honest. I mean, with someone like Armando, like what I just say about Armando is Armando is in complete control of the project. He's a real showrunner, and his word is final, and we do what Armando wants. However, he's also very collaborative and very generous. So he does what Armando does well, I think, is he picks people he wants to work with, and then he trusts their instincts. So that goes for the cast, that goes for his heads of departments. So for me, for the production designer, for example, Armando really actually liberated us to be creative on our own and to bring ideas to him. So a lot of the sort of designs, you know, Armando would give us a general direction of which way to go, and we would kind of come up with a solution, offer it to him, and he'd almost always take it. So he's in complete control, but also very, very, very collaborative and generous. When you have it broken down a lot more, it just depends on the person, you know. I've had good experiences and bad experiences. I mean, you just sort of learn from every person, every experience. There's no two projects that are the same. The thing I'm currently on, that I guess we'll talk about in a little while, I'm working with a director who is just a director, and this is a film. And so our collaboration is very much talking about shot making and visual storytelling. And we can do that on a scene-by-scene basis. But he has conversations with the writer, he has conversations with the production designer, sort of separate to me in this instance. So yeah, it just depends, and I try to sort of learn and grow on every project.
In the world of cinematography, a lot of people get into the single camera field, particularly episodic drama, and then there's a whole group of cinematographers who specialize in comedy. Either single camera or multi-camera, depending on the nature of the project. You seem to be somebody who can do both. Was that your thinking when you decided to break into the TV world or break into the cinematography world?
No, it wasn't. I would say I've now done both because of Avenue 5, but I think I'm very much a single camera cinematographer. I came up making films. Cinema was sort of my first love. And really, TV has become, you know, closer and closer to cinema in terms of quality, and particularly in terms of cinematography. So I've spent the last 4 years shooting TV series, but they've all been single camera until Avenue 5. So on Avenue 5, you know, really, I was a bit of an imposter. It was, what do we do if we have a single camera DP and we put them into a multi-camera comedy situation? And I sort of did the best I could and made it my own and tried to do something unique and original. But I wouldn't say I'm a multi-camera DP. I think that the sort of studio-lit comedies, the way those guys work, it's incredibly skillful, incredibly technical, and very different to what I was doing. So, yeah, I'm definitely an imposter in multi-camera, and I really enjoyed doing it. And I'm probably going to do season 2 of Avenue 5, so... I really enjoyed doing it, but I think I'm a single camera DP first and foremost.
What TV series did you work on prior to both Avenue 5 and the Amazon show?
Yeah, so the first TV series I did was called The Woman in White. It was a BBC five-part Victorian thriller that was with what convinced me to do that, it was a Black Mirror director. He's a film director. He's done two episodes of Black Mirror, Carl Tibbetts, and he wanted to do a very bold, original, sort of David Fincher-esque thriller, but set in a Victorian time period, which just sounded really interesting. So I shot all five episodes of that miniseries. Then I did another miniseries for Amazon called White Dragon, which was set in Hong Kong, again with a film director, Paul Andrew Williams. We shot 8 episodes of that together, 8 hours. Then I went straight to the Amazon series The Feed, which is the science fiction one that I mentioned. I shot 4 episodes of that. And then on to Avenue 5, and I shot all 9 episodes of Avenue 5. So, yeah, I had a really good run of 4 series in a row where I got to, if not shoot the whole series, I got to at least set them up with the first episode.
Evan Bolter, the director of photography on Avenue 5, the hit new HBO series on Sunday nights. He's our guest this half hour on Tomorrow We Tell. He's joining us live from New Orleans. We'll tell you about that why in a moment. And Avenue 5, by the way, is on this Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Starring Hugh Laurie and a great, great cast, too. And from Armando Iannucci, the Emmy and Peabody Award-winning creator of Veep, the great run that ended last year on HBO. Julie Dreyfus, of course, in the lead. So if you do question or comment our remaining moments with Evan, make the call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, next week we have 3 episodes coming your way, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at this very hour. And on Wednesday, we'll showcase the 2 people behind the Facebook Watch series, The Real Brothers of Simi Valley, getting into season 3 this coming week. Actor and creator Jimmy Tatro, if you think Jimmy Tatro will be with us, and co-creator Christian Pierce will be around. That's Jimmy Tatro, Christian Pierce from The Real Brothers of Simi Valley on Facebook Watch, going to season 3 this coming week. We'll have them live Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, on a special midweek edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What do you think, by the way, about the way TV cinematography is going? You know, when you watch for a show like Mr. Robot, for example, and you see Todd Campbell doing things like unusual angles where the person is in one corner of the screen, but he forces you to see the background of everything else. Or, for example, more and more scenes which look like, or whole episodes of shows which look like they've been shot in one take.
Yeah, it's an incredible time. I mean, digital filmmaking has just enabled this leveling of the playing field in the tools available. I mean, it's, you know, now you look at, let's say, Roger Deakins or, you know, some of the great Oscar-winning film cinematographers, and the tools they're using, the lenses and the cameras they're using, are now available to us on TV dramas. So off the top of my head, Blade Runner 2049 that won the Oscar for Cinematography, Roger Deakins, last year, was shot on the Alexa Mini with Master Prime lenses. And that's exactly the same camera and lenses that I used on White Dragon for Amazon, which is sort of crazy, really. So it really is a leveling of the playing field. And I think the way people watch content now, obviously on Netflix, you know, whether they're watching a series or a film, really it's just the running length that's sort of defining that. It's the same experience sitting down, pressing play and watching it. So I think audiences are also more accepting of cinematic imagery. You know, we're not dealing with small square televisions or, you know, black and white even going back. We now, most people have big TVs, widescreen, they watch films, they watch TV series, and it's all kind of blending into the same thing. So it's really exciting. I'm very lucky to be a cinematographer whilst this is happening. And yeah, we're all also looking, you know, every project we all do, we're looking to try something different. We're looking to push it forward. And it shows, like Mr. Robot, like you say, that push things forward. And then, you know, we try and go beyond that ourselves. And it's a great time to be doing it. And hopefully a great time for audiences as well.
Now, you're in New Orleans, Evan, because of a Netflix project you're doing. Talk about that project and how's it going so far?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, very well. I mean, I'm in New Orleans. It's 3 p.m. I've only actually been up a couple of hours because we were doing a night shoot last night until about 5 a.m. So we're on our first week of production. It's going very well. It's a thriller for Netflix, feature film. It's called Night Teeth. I think that's a working title. It's going to change. It's a thriller that takes place in Los Angeles over one night with a genre twist. I won't sort of reveal what that twist is, but it's a director I've worked with several times, Adam Randall. We did Level Up, which is on Netflix, and I Boy, which is a Netflix original feature film as well. It's our third feature film together. And as I was mentioning a minute ago, we're just trying to be incredibly bold with this film. It's really, really, really visual, very colourful, lots of neon, lots of rain. It's hopefully beautiful, and it's great cast, great script, going well. But as I say, we're in New Orleans, shooting 6 weeks here in New Orleans, New Orleans doubling for Los Angeles. And then we move to Los Angeles in March and shoot 2 weeks on location in L.A.
And before I let you go, I have a hunch I know who you're going to be rooting for on Sunday night at the Oscars, Roger Deakins, for his work on 1917.
Absolutely, absolutely. But, yeah, I think what Roger did on 1917 was technically unbelievable. I mean, the single-shot nature of it was just incredible. But there's actually a scene in it, sort of two-thirds of the way through the film at night, where there are some flares that pass overhead, the combination of visuals and using those flares and the score, I think, was sort of this 3 minutes of just pure visceral cinema. And I think even if that hadn't been a single shot film, I thought that scene alone was the most beautiful, beautifully lit, beautifully. It's just a beautiful idea of, you know, night lighting as a cinematographer is one of the most difficult things. Is it street lights? Is it the moon? Is it, you know, fire? How do you light a huge area at night? And Roger came up with this idea of these flares going overhead, and it was just the most beautiful, ingenious idea, and I'm certain he'll win the Oscar for it, and well-deserved too.
Yeah, if you make one of those, definitely will happen. And, of course, the Oscars, of course, Sunday night on ABC. And if you get a chance and do, check out Avenue 5, latest episode on HBO. It's Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Check out where HBO is available in your area on cable and satellite. And, of course, for more details online, HBO.com. Avenue 5, this Sunday, latest episode, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Even Bolter, the director of photography on Avenue 5, thank you so much for joining us, taking time from New Orleans. Good luck with the rest of the first season, hopefully many, many more to come. And I'm happy that you're going to be back with them for season two. And also the very best with your new Netflix film. Hopefully it comes out. It's great.
Thank you so much. Great to speak to you. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome, Evan. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you. You too. Thank you.
Evan Bolter, director of photography on Avenue 5, joining us live from New Orleans, where he's in the midst of doing a Netflix movie that will be coming out later this year. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week, and if you're first with the correct answer, you will win The 5-Second Rule, the international best-selling book by Mel Robbins, who, of course, is the new syndicated daytime talk show host, available on stations around the country, syndicated by Sony. Here's the question that we first raised on Monday's show. What local TV co-host became co-star on The Jeffersons? What local TV co-host became co-star on The Jeffersons? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your full mailing address, so if you win, we get the prize out to you ASAP. Again, the question, what local TV co-host became a co-star on The Jeffersons? So, if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. If you missed the question a moment ago, we'll try to repeat it before we leave you today. If not, first thing tomorrow morning, check out Facebook or my Twitter handle at UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so, and all the very best. And incidentally, if you want more Tomorrow Be Televised between our shows, check out my Tomorrow Be Televised columns under Media Village, the TV video download section. I usually file a column every week about the world of television, where it's at, where it's going. So check it out at Media Village, the Media Leadership website. In addition, you'll find out some wonderful reporting and journalism about where TV is at from the likes of people like Charlene Weiser and Martin E.B. Moss and a whole lot more. So check out MediaVillage.com, the Media Leadership website, available to you 24/7. When we come back, we pay tribute to three people who, in their own way, made this medium, the medium of television, far better than when they came in. Gene Reynolds, Lucy Jargas, and yes, Kirk Douglas. We'll get to that after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, TuneIn.com. Together, more than 40 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home for Honeycomb Hideout. Check it out with Johnny Davis tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Great entertainment for you at Honeycomb Hideout. Johnny Davis is your host tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Remember, that's BTR 24/7, at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of Tomorrow We Televised on this Friday afternoon. What was this? You just joining us at the top of the hour. So I'm going with you live from New York, 48 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment about the world of television, still like to hear it during our remaining minutes with you. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere. You're catching us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn Radio. And don't forget, we have our chat room still in business for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Over the course of this week, three very special people, each in their own way, made television better, passed away. And I thought that it would be nice to wrap up today's episode with a special tribute to all three of them. One of them you might not think was a television person, but he really was, Kirk Douglas. And I'll get to that in a moment. But I want to talk about two other people. Both of them, along with Douglas, lived great long lives in their 90s, and in the case of both this person and Douglas, into a second century. Gene Reynolds started his career in entertainment as a child actor in film and television programs. And in the late 1950s, he decided to go from being an actor to being on the other side of the television camera as an episodic writer, producer, and director. In the late 1960s, he got his first big chance to direct and produce a major television series. It was a groundbreaking series, a comedy about life at a Los Angeles high school, one of the most diverse high schools ever seen to that point on television in terms of its student body. The program was Room 222. It starred Lloyd Haynes as one of the key teachers there. He was one of the first African-American male people to be leading a comedy series. The cast was outstanding. Denise Nicholas, Michael Constantine, Karen Valentine, and Reynolds worked with a very promising writer named James Brooks. You know him now as for The Tracy Ullman Show, The Mary Tyler Moore Show, The Simpsons, and a whole lot more. By that time, Brooks was getting into television, and this was his first major series, and Gene Reynolds was his guide into it. Gene was the producer and often director, Brooks the creator, and one of the key writers. Room 222 was an immediate sensation on ABC. It ran for 5 seasons. The first season won a bunch of Emmy Awards, especially for its actors. Haynes was nominated for Best Actor in a comedy, should have won, by the way, in my opinion, and it won for both Constantine and Valentine's performance. And throughout its run, it was beautifully filmed, terrific scripting and directing, wonderful theme music by Jerry Goldsmith, had it all. And Gene Reynolds didn't know at the time, but that was his big breakthrough as a major force in television producing and directing. And then in the early 1970s, he got the assignment, assisted by one of the best comedy writers in the business, Larry Gelbart, to adapt a very controversial movie and make it a weekly television show, MASH. Initially, MASH was partnered as the back-to-back of another movie adaptation, Anna and the King, with Yul Brynner repeating his keen-eyed Oscar-winning role, opposite Samantha Agar as Anna. A lot of people thought Anna was going to be the hit and MASH the failure. Boy, did it turn out to be the other way around, and I mean boy. While Anna only lasted a season, MASH lasted 11, with an outstanding cast headed by Alan Alda, Wayne Rogers, McLean Stevenson, later Harry Morgan, David Ogden Stiers, Larry Minville, Loretta Swit, Gary Berghoff, etc., with brilliant writing and direction, often from Gene Reynolds, Hi Aberbach, and others. Reynolds steered the ship for the first few seasons, and then later stayed on for 11 years, an incredible Emmy and Peabody Award-winning run, culminating in still one of the highest-rated individual episodes of all time, the two-hour Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen. Reynolds had another big hit in his hands, and he wasn't done yet. In the late 1970s, he teamed up with Mary Tyler Moore's production company to do a sequel to The Mary Tyler Moore Show, a drama known as Lou Grant, where Grant goes from being the producer of a nightly newscast to the editor of a major paper. And again, Reynolds combined his talent for comedy, dramedy, and for social issue raising all in one. in a series that lasted four seasons and also got itself a share, like MASH in Room 222, a nice share of Emmy Awards and a Peabody Award, too. That's just some of Reynolds' output. He did other shows as well, wide variety, both comedy and drama. But whatever assignment he did, he made the show better for being part of it. Reynolds passed away early this week in his late 90s. And I'm sure that he died knowing that he really ushered in, along with others, the current era of plentiful television, of acclaimed plentiful television, of the new golden age of great drama and great comedy that we're living in today. In the early 1960s, Lucy Jarvis was somebody very special in television, one of the few women to be a documentary producer. Very few women were in journalism at the time, and if they were in, they were in maybe as a correspondent, or maybe like a Marlene Sanders doing a five-minute newscast mid-afternoon on ABC or CBS or NBC. And in the 1960s, Lucy Jarvis took her cameras and gave us an inside look at places that the American public had never gone before through television. In the early 1960s, created a special called Inside the Kremlin for NBC, the first time that anybody had taken their cameras to showcase the inside of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, now the Soviet Union, now Russia. And a year later, did a second special for NBC, showcasing the great treasures of one of the most marvelous art museums anywhere in the world, the Louvre. Believe it or not, Lucy Jarvis was just getting started in the world of documentary television with those two acclaimed specials. In the 1970s, her cameras went on a rare visit to China to go behind that Iron Curtain and showcase life in China, both in the government and among the people. The billions of people in that country. Later on, Jarvis would do other documentary specials, would even take a turn at forming her own production company and doing made-for-TV movies. But those initial specials, Russia, the Louvre, China, were groundbreaking because they gave us, the American public, the opportunity to see a bigger window on the world in color than we ever had in our lifetime. And the great thing is that Lucy Jarvis, by living into a second century, she died at the age of 103 this week, was able to see a greater universe of women in the world of documentary and journalism. Now, more and more women are fronting documentaries at all levels, of course, anchoring newscasts, anchoring primetime specials, anchoring cable news and broadcast news, producing news magazine segments or the news magazine itself, a far cry from her initial time in television. And she got to see that. And she got to see that because she took the steps to open that world up for women. And I think the world of journalism and the world of documentary production owes her, Lucy Jarvis, a great debt of gratitude because she paved the way for the Sheila Nevins and the Barbara Couples and many, many other people to get into journalism, to get into documentary work, and give us all a greater perspective on our world and how we're welcome to it. And third, Kirk Douglas. Now, some of you might be wondering, huh? Kirk Douglas, one of the great film actors of all time. Why are you citing him on a program all about television? Here's why. Because in the mid-1950s, Kirk Douglas, as he was really getting into some of the best roles of his career, made a decision that still speaks volumes today. And like Jarvis, opened up doors. He was the first major actor to launch his own production company, Brenner Productions. And it wasn't too long after that his contemporary, Burt Lancaster, also opened his own production company, to Lancaster. It was through Brenna that Douglas was able to choose the roles he wanted to play on film. And early on, he gave a promising photographer-turned-film director named Stanley Kubrick the chance of a lifetime to produce and direct a movie he would star in. That film was Path of Glory. It's one of the great films of its kind ever. I still see it regularly on Turner Classic Movies, and it is a masterpiece. And Douglas's role is a masterpiece. And not too long after that came Spartacus. Perhaps, for many people, Kirk Douglas's most important film role. He produced that film. He hired Stanley Kubrick to get in after the initial choice, Anthony Mann, did not work out. And it was in Spartacus that he gave a great writer named Dalton Trumbo a second chance at an entertainment career after he was blacklisted unfairly by a House committee that was looking into supposed communism in America. By filming Verna, Douglas opened the door for many, many more actors to do their own thing, to launch their own independent production companies. And that is, in fact, happening right now in television, where more and more actors and actresses now have their own production companies and doing what they want to do, the roles they want to play, the storylines they want to pursue in television. A big, big part of this great era of plentiful, diverse, smart TV and interactive television that we may still be in the opening act on. And in case you didn't know, Kirk Douglas also got involved with television in the latter half of his career, from the 70s to the 90s. He did a number of special dramas, including a musical version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He did a number of made-for-TV movies, one of which he won an Emmy Award nomination for, called Amos, about a nursing home resident who wanted a better life. A film that also had a lot to say about the decrepit life of many nursing homes in this country at that time. He also won two other Emmy nominations, one for a guest performance on Tales of the Crypt. That's right. He did a horror anthology show. And one of his last performances, a guest appearance on the CBS series Touched by an Angel. That was also an Emmy nominee. By the way, Amos, he was also nominated for the Golden Globe Award for that special. Kirk Douglas also was a wonderful talk show guest, whether it was on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson or The Merv Griffin Show or The Dick Cavett Show. He came with a lot to say about the world of Hollywood, about his life. And whether he's promoting books like The Ragman's Son, his terrific autobiography, or coming back from a stroke or a plane crash, where he lived to tell the tale, Kirk Douglas was larger than life, but he was also down to earth at the same time. And he was so thrilled that many members of his family, including his son Michael, got involved in the entertainment side of the business. And he lived to see his son Michael produce an award-winning film that won an Oscar, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, a film that Kirk Douglas on Off-Broadway played a role in a theatrical run. Whether you know it or not, just the fact that Kirk Douglas was one of the first to take the risk and launch his own production company paved the way for many, many people today, many actors, actresses, and independent producers to do their thing. And just like Gene Reynolds and Lucy Jarvis, in his own way, Kirk Douglas left this earth, leaving TV all the better for all of us. And incidentally, I'm happy to say that Sunday night, Kirk Douglas will be remembered on the Academy Award telecast on ABC, being part of the In Memoriam section. Hope it'll be a big part of it, too. So all three, to Gene Reynolds, to Lucy Jarvis, and to Kirk Douglas, thank you for your contribution to television. Thank you for opening doors for this day and age. And thank you for the quality and the commitment you raised for this medium. One more time to say it. You made it all the better for it. Before we leave you today, let's give you our classic trivia question of the week one more time. And again, if you are the first with the correct answer, you win the 5-Second Rule book by Mel Robbins, the daytime syndicated talk show host that came on this past fall. Here's the question. What local TV co-host became co-star on The Jeffersons? What local TV co-host became a co-star on The Jeffersons? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name, where you're emailing from. If you missed the question a moment ago, we'll post it tomorrow morning on Facebook and at Twitter at my handle at UVCSimonTWBT. That's UVCSimonTWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in, so do so, and all the very best. And speaking of Twitter, the Oscars, of course, on Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on ABC. And as always, I will be at my computer, at my Twitter handle, with updates all night long on who wins. So check it out at UBC Simon TWBT. And, of course, Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, in our news notes section, we'll have the latest on the ratings for the Oscar telecast the night before. So be sure to check it out. Remember, we will be back with you Monday, Wednesday, and Friday of next week. 3 episodes a week coming your way. Next week on Tomorrow Be Televised. Coming up on Wednesday, we'll have the co-creators of the popular Facebook Watch series, The Real Brothers of Simi Valley, watching Season 3, actor and co-creator Jimmy Tatro, and co-creator Christian Pierce. And next Friday, from the new Hulu series, Utopia Falls, the creator director R.T. Thrawn, and executive producer Andre Gofano. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, this weekend, you can check out this episode and other recent episodes in podcast form at Apple TV, iTunes, Spreaker Podcast app, TuneIn.com, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network at iHeartRadio.com. When you go to TuneIn Radio or you go to iHeartRadio, on the homepage, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, click, and you're right there. And remember, we love hearing from you. What do you think about our guest today? What's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going? We want to hear, and we do respond. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to close your name and where you're from. I do respond in 24 hours. Remember, that's how you get involved, not only our classic trivia question of the week, but it's also how you get involved in our ongoing feature, A Show to Know. Is there a TV show you like that doesn't get enough attention? We want to give it the attention, but we got to hear from you. And when we do, you get the credit for it. So check it out. Show you know. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. You can also communicate on Facebook, and you can also find me on Twitter at UVCSimonTWBT. That's UVCSimonTWBT. And remember, we always hear from you because what you say matters. And don't forget also, if you want updates on our show, go to Tumblr.com because we do post our, as we do on Blog Talk Radio, it also appears on Tumblr, what we've got coming up in terms of future guests and topics. So remember, use social media, use my email. We want to hear from you because we always say around here, what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not through those of Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and iHeartRadio. At BTR, Production Associates Candace Williams, ASO's Blog Talk Radio's General Manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, Executive Content Producer. The co-founders of BTR are Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. And don't forget, if your trial run becomes a 4-month subscription, you will save on the monthly price, $7.95 a month. That's a special present they offer. So to get that, and to get that trial run with three free audiobooks, it's audibletrial.com/televised. But Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Thanks so much to our guests. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the Oscars. We'll be back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio Speaker, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, and TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. Whatever you're up to this weekend, please make it safe and make it great. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.